Oh, behave. Yeah. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Okay, it's good to be here. We're back then. We're at episode 4 for the Spacecast, and I'm with you, Hamish Sterling. My name, Troy Haynes, is with me as always, and we've got a special guest. Dallas.
Special pest.
McMillan.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Hey, Dallas.
Dallas, it's great to have you here. We're going to be having a chat with you just in a moment's time, right. So let us get through the housekeeping here with the Spacecast. And how's your week been, Troy?
Solid. Lots of wind in the flow, mate. Magic happening all around. It's been really cool, actually.
Excellent.
Lots of opportunities out there, mate. It's a matter of choosing which one.
Mate, as easy as that.
It is. Well, that's the hard part, you know, knowing which one to focus on.
Good one.
Yeah.
We had some feedback during the week from a listener that spoke about our last episode about some acronyms that we may use, and we toss things out like R&D and all these sorts of expressions, IP.
Yeah.
So we're going to try and focus a little bit on breaking that down and making it...
Using real words.
Yeah. Try not to be too clever because... you know?
Some people don't get, and that's really good feedback. So anyone out there that has anything like that, it's really appreciated so that we can not confuse people. It's all about educating, motivating, inspiring.
That's exactly right. So with the podcast so far, it's going really well. We're trying to rack up a 1,000 downloads is what I'm thinking in my head.
1,000?
1,000, that's what we're aiming for. We're still not quite there, but we're not too far away. And once we get to that stage... Well, we're using this as a bit of a case study to form a small business idea and flourish it into something that's, downloaded and appreciated by entrepreneurs out there. So
nationally, globally, locally.
What else has been happening, Troy? We had some drinks on Friday.
Went to TGIF. Every Friday fortnight, we catch up with some game changers from the region. There's a bit of a shout-out gets sent out. If you want to get on that list, do contact us, explore@thespacecans.com. So we caught up with a number of game changers, 5:30 till 7:30 at Bar 8. It was good. So we got, are we hearing from someone later on in the show?
We did. We caught up with an entrepreneur, a guy who's got a really good product and interesting story, and we'll be having a listen to him. Actually, we might throw to that right now.
Okay, Dale, how you going, mate?
Thanks, Rob.
So we're at TGIF Drinks. Just wanted to ask a few questions about what you're working on, how it's going, just touch base. So Dale, tell us a little bit about yourself, Jim.
Well, I studied a Bachelor of Business majoring in entrepreneurship a fair while ago.
Nice.
I've been out working as a consultant since then, helping people build franchise businesses, and just recently I've taken the plunge to launch my own startup.
Yo.
And we're working on that at the moment.
Awesome. And how's it going?
Well, I think every book I've read and everyone I've talked to has said embrace failure. And when we've gone out, we have launched a beta test that we are embarrassed about, as they say you should do. And we're learning very quickly from our users. So we haven't experienced the same success we were expecting to straight off the bat. But we are learning quickly, and we're hoping that this learning curve puts us out ahead of the competition when they enter the market.
So you've taken a lean startup approach. So when you're saying that you're embarrassed by your beta, your first concept, it's because you wanted to get to market quickly?
Absolutely. We didn't just want to get to market quickly, but we also wanted to fail fast and cheaply. The idea being, if we go to market with something that we're proud of, we've probably invested a fair bit of money into that. And the rationale is, as soon as we get to market, the market is going to tell us what they really want.
I've made that mistake before, invested $40,000 in making this amazing website, which I loved, and then only to realise that no one really loved it as much as me, and they have all these features that no one really cares about. So the lean startup is something that I've since learned, and it just makes sense to test a cool feature or a cool assumption in the market and get that direct feedback.
Absolutely, and it's amazing the feedback that we've received. Not only have we done really small pivots within the actual functionality of the service we're providing, but we've also looked at potentially doing some quite large pivots, looking at serving different markets on the technology platform that we're developing.
Wow, so that's amazing. So you, based on the feedback that you've gotten so far, able to change directions completely.
Well, for sure. I don't think we're too set in our ways, and we really did go to the market with the attitude that we wanted to learn from our customers and react to their feedback. We've had fantastic feedback from our direct customers, but the actual users haven't taken up the product as quickly as we're expecting, so the end users, and we're working on that at the moment. But yeah, we've got a lot to learn, but we're also having a lot of opportunities open up to us as we learn.
Awesome. So have you had any significant wins along the way? I know you've mentioned like lots of challenges and what's been really significant about what you've learned?
Look, I think probably the most significant win we've had is just the amount of people that we've spoken to that are potential customers that have said, yes, we want in on this, and we want your service in our restaurant or cafe. It's an edgy product, it's quite new and innovative, and I think it's meeting the market where the market is at. The lessons I'm learning very quickly is really do go to market and really do listen to your customers, because it's those customers that are going to tell you what you need to know, not necessarily what you want to know.
Absolutely.
Also, use your networks, because it's very easy to think, and I make this mistake as well, that I can do it myself, but the reality is I'm only a specialist in a very small area, and I know a lot of people that are specialists in other areas, so go out and buy them a coffee or a beer and hear their feedback on it.
I think that's fantastic advice, absolutely. So tell me about funding. Are you self-funded?
Look, at the moment we're self-funding. I sort of understand that once somebody buys in, there is a risk discount factor on that investment. So we wanted to get this business as proven as we possibly can before we go to anybody else looking for money, so that we only have to give away the smallest percentage of the business possible. So we're going to prove minimum viable product, and we're going to prove that there's demand for it, and that the customer is willing to pay before we actually seek any external funds.
In my experience, that's once you've got a proof of concept and you've got a customer base that's already using it, well, then it just makes sense for someone to invest, because you've got something that's actually working in the marketplace as opposed to just an idea. So it really is an opportunity for an investor. So you're almost investment ready at that stage.
Yeah, that's right. Look, the other thing that we're talking about and we're aware of is that although I've studied and although I do back myself in what we're doing, I don't have a track record. And for people to invest in somebody without a track record is a very, very high risk activity. So the concept is we've got to get something out there that is actually working, and then people will be a lot more comfortable to work with us.
So, and the team, like who are you working with? And
at the moment, it's my wife and myself, and it's largely Stephanie as the moral support, and I'm doing a lot of the grunt work. Although there are also a bunch of people that we meet with regularly around Cairns, and I'm bouncing ideas off them, and I'm utilising my networks as well as I can. I'm also working very close with the development guys, who have been fantastic, and we're working together to develop this with the potential that we could run this as a joint venture in the future.
Wow, cool. So potential that they might buy into it is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, that's up for discussion.
Okay.
Again, though, the concept is get out there, prove that it works, and then have that discussion.
Awesome. So get in the game, fail fast and fail small.
Absolutely.
What are the sort of take homes would you recommend for anybody that's got an idea that they've been sitting on?
Well, I think the real lesson is don't place too much value on your idea. Go out and tell the market about it and get the feedback from the actual market, because they're the ones that have got the money in their pocket, and they're the ones that will tell you what they want. So go out there, use your energy and your time to hear from the market. Don't invest too much money in it before you've actually got their feedback. And then sort of pivot quickly and change direction quickly in response to their feedback. Yeah, and have fun doing it. It's a journey.
So develop the concept with your customers in the market. Don't be over-attached to your ideas, because at the end of the day, that could be the biggest downfall.
Absolutely.
Your inability to be able to move and really listen to what the customer's needs are.
Yeah.
It's easy for us as entrepreneurs to fantasize about our ideas and think this is it, when it's a mistake not to let information or data feedback from the customers in.
Also, I think one of the things that we have to face and accept as entrepreneurs is that failure is actually our best friend, and probably our biggest responsibility is to manage failure. Because without failure, we're never actually going to experience or achieve anything amazing. So we have to go out there to the market with our idea, look forward to learning from mistakes, listen to people's feedback, and then implement their changes. And you know, some people are quite afraid of experiencing failure. It's actually going to rocket your business forwards if you embrace that, learn from it, and implement those changes.
Failure is the way, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes, I think I've said it before on the Spacecast, is that if you're not bankrupt or a millionaire by the time you're 30, you're not trying hard enough.
Well, I hope I'm not bankrupt, and I'm not quite sure I'll be a millionaire, but I'm certainly trying.
Mate, we've known each other for a while, and I'd like to suggest that if I was going to invest in anyone, you'd have my money.
Well, thanks for that, Troy.
All right, bud, thanks for your time. And Dale Edney from Audemore.
We're Sam the Waiter at the moment.
Sam the Waiter. I love that as well. Like, the flexibility of the name. Testing that in the market as well, are you?
Absolutely, yeah. Get down to Caffeine, or get down to Tosca in Cairns Central. Take your phone down there. If you've got an NFC-enabled phone, this is your chance to switch that functionality on and use it. Otherwise, you can scan the QR code. If you're not confident with each of them, just enter the short URL and you'll be right away.
Actually, we can get this to the beginning of the interview, but we haven't talked exactly about what it is.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so let's, Dale, just tell us a little bit more about what it is.
Okay. In my day job, I work with a lot of restaurants and cafes, and one of the challenges that they're often experiencing is that their staff costs are really high, and they can't afford to employ enough staff to get around to the tables often enough to take that second order from the customer. And that second order provides vital profitability for the store. So our concept is to enable customers to order their second coffee through their smartphone from their table within that cafe.
Awesome. Wow, so and how is there a concept around, like, so it's at the moment, sorry, it's two places in town, in
two
Cairns?
Two places, that's right. You can go down and check it out at Tosca, or you can check it in Cairns Central, or you can check it out in Caffeine's down on Grafton Street.
Awesome. All right, fantastic. Cheers.
We have a chat with our guest Dallas McMillan. He's been patiently sitting here while Troy and I have waffled on. We've had a bit of a listen to Dale's interview, which was fantastic. And
thanks, Dale.
Thank you, Dale. Yep. And Dallas.
And welcome,
yes,
Dallas.
Yes,
welcome.
Hello, greetings. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you giving up your time.
It's the only non-renewable resource, so
indeed,
you need to be careful with it.
Dallas, you've got a few different skills, and you cover a few different sections of business and entrepreneurial
indeed, yes,
spirit. Would you mind telling us a little bit about what it is you do and sort of those focuses?
Sure. I'm a veterinarian by training, so I've been a vet in Cairns for 12 years, and in that time I got really interested in working online, built a website for my practice, and then another one, and started getting interested in social media and client education, communication online, and you know, started doing similar work for other local businesses, and you know, from that Everything you do online is interconnected with other things, so there's no easy wins. You've got to keep learning new things. So just branched out from there, and it's been a really exciting journey.
So your Influential is your new gig that you're working on?
Yes, indeed.
Which is focused primarily on, at a cool level, on branding.
Yeah, so...
Tell us a little bit about the importance of branding.
Terrific. So, you know, branding is... It's a bit of a nefarious concept, really. A lot of us probably think of a brand as almost like a logo, where you know your brand is your company mark. But and historically that was the case. You know, a brand was something you put on your livestock so that your neighbour wouldn't steal them. But as time went on, it became a logo. But in the last 20 or 30 years, a brand is recognised as being how people think of your business when they're not looking. A brand is more of a soft concept where it's a bit like marketing. Branding is happening all the time, whether you like it or not. And what we call branding is really your conscious effort to influence people's brand perception so that it's positive rather than negative.
Okay, so with the whole branding, and you said before logos, and I mean, obviously, if you think of the big names, if you think of Coca-Cola and Pepsi, the logo, you immediately know what that is. You could draw it down, you know their colours. So the whole business structure, from your website to your packaging to what you produce as a product, does that all
absolutely
roll
so
into one?
they're all our efforts at branding, but really branding extends to your building, your signage, your staff, the way you answer the phone, the interaction your client has, and the brand is actually the impression your client has. It's entirely non-tangible. You know, when I got interested in this, I was thinking, well, the brand is, you know, a logo, and I'll have it on my letterhead too. But really, the brand is intangible. We can try and influence it through our branding, and you know, that gets bigger and bigger as we get online and start looking at things like customer service.
Would you say it's the experience that the customers have with your products and your company, but not only that, the staff have at your company as well? Like, does it encompass, like, values and culture and stuff like that as well, would you suggest?
The actual brand is your market's concept of who you are. So your market includes your internal customers and your competitors, as well as your customers and prospective customers, and your branding certainly encompasses, you know, internal customers. Like, we're realizing how important that is. You mentioned Coca-Cola. I mean, they're right at the forefront of thinking about this brand as much beyond the logo, and they've done a lot of stuff on how brands are changing and really trying to push the envelope, which is, you know, pretty cunning when you make sugared soft drink that lots of people see.
Beyond the beverage.
What does Coke represent, would you say?
Well, they want to be life. Coke is life and fun. But they've really got this vision of Coke being the thing you have when you're sharing fun experiences. So they're trying to make Coke synonymous with, like, almost owning the emotion of fun. Yeah. So, and that's sort of the push in this big business branding, is to claim a stake of this emotional territory.
Association.
Yeah, wow. Which they've kind of got without us realising it. You know, whether it's Coke as life or beer is, you know, partying with your mates. Mm. You know, to a degree that's occurring already, but they're getting quite sophisticated about how they're doing it. And of course, we need to do, you know, think like this in branding our company's team.
Let's step it back a little bit. Let's move back from Coke, because that's the pinnacle. And let's talk about someone who's just starting in business, somebody who possibly has a product and they're looking at ways, okay, well, what do I need to do? I've got my product, I've made it, I've prototyped it, it's ready to go, whatever it may be. Now I need to get an online presence, and I need to, i.e., get some business cards made, or do I need letterheads? Do I need to stop? Or do I need to do all of these things to start, or are there some bare essentials that you can start with to slowly give you those steps?
I think they're all great points, but it all comes back to, you know, what's your company about? Because you can step too far into getting the concrete stuff down, and it really limits where you can take the company. Possibly you're running into competitors, or you outgrow the brand you've got, and, you know, you mentioned I'm sort of working on an a new brand for my business. You know, I'd sort of outgrown my previous brand and had to come up with something more inclusive. So understanding your business, and, you know, people like Troy, this is what they really help you do, is identify what you want to do, what you can offer, unique selling propositions, because we're in a highly commoditized marketplace for almost everything we do. You need to be different and unique in what you offer, because, you know, guaranteed, no matter how good your idea seems, someone else is doing something similar, and they're ahead of you. What have you got that makes you special? So you know, powerful branding comes back to identifying why you're the next guy. Yeah. And for a lot of smaller people, their personal brand is the one unique thing they've really got. You know, if you're an accountant, or you know, even have an app that you're producing as a startup type company, there's a million people out there trying to build an app right now. So you've got to, and this project might not last. It might fall over, and then all your work on your brand can have gone to waste. But you're always stuck with your name, and you're always stuck with who you are. So you want to be constantly building that as a platform for other brands, because you can leverage it. And if you look at the top people in most industries, they are people, not brands. And Coke's an exception from that in many ways.
So in leading on from that, say someone that has gone into the market and they've done their best with their branding, thinking that this is how they wanted to represent their brand, but realizing later on that they need to actually make a shift with their brand. How hard is that? Could you give us some sort of tips around what it takes to shift a market's perception of a brand from one direction to another?
Yeah, it's a really great question, Troy. I think marketplaces are more fluid than ever, and our capacity to influence them through things like social media and your websites, and having contact with your customers, like, rather than saying, well, this is us, we're marketing to you, you're receiving the information, and we're just going to change it. If that's always been a conversation, then rebranding is actually a great way to renew that contact, or build on the relationship and say, hey, you're just fantastic that we've done business with you in the past. We've got something really exciting to offer. So it's it can be a big thing, rebranding, but it's an opportunity to strengthen the relationship. And you know, some of those clients might have fit in well with your old business model, but they're likely going to be perfect to be offering your new improved brand, or even just the products that you should have sort of moved them up to previously, and you haven't got onto it. So a rebrand can be a great excuse to strengthen your relationship with your market.
Awesome.
I want to break it down back to what I said before, if I can, and try and get some concrete answers out of you.
Yes.
Okay, so if I came to you and if I said, all right, Dallas, you know, I've got Pocket Cricket sort of done all right now, I want to introduce a new game, let's call it Pocket Footy.
Wow, that sounds cool.
So I want to come and I want to start out with you. I've got the made, I've got the prototypes. What can you do for me, and where should we start?
Visual recognition. So you need a logo that encapsulates what you do. You need a name and a tagline.
Okay.
Like, I think they're three critical things. And you know, these almost don't cost you any money to come up with, like a sketch and getting something down to start working with, but then enlisting help, whether it's from a professional or from a, you know, your market is a great place to get feedback. So, you know, people have already said, gee, I like your product. That was great. And then, you know, then taking that and so you've got research back with an understanding of what's great about your brand, and then realising them as, you know, a produced logo and saying, am I happy with this? I think that's how I'd start. And effectively, a decent logo will do your website, it will do your letterhead, it will do your business card and social media presences. That's all you need to get up and running and look like you're organised.
Yep.
You know, you can... There's a lot more you can do if it gets big, like packaging in your situation. But to get started, just having, you know, one essential, you know, a sort of brand logo which will cover for all those items will make you look professional and stand out from the crowd.
Something visually distinctive and eye-catching.
It really needs to capture what you do. And, you know, some people tend to think a little bit too big. Mm-hmm. On, you know, they want to capture too much. And I think identifying what makes you unique, even if it's not world beating, it's really about you and what's different from you. You know, it might be geographic, say here in North Queensland, at a tropical animal like a gecko or a frog or a cassowary.
Yeah.
You know, you've still got to have a great business, but the great business that's recognisable is better than the great business with a generic brand. So, you know, make it something that stands out rather than something that is, you know, might look really fancy and really cool, but actually, I mean, other people anywhere in the world could come up with it.
So consideration, based on what you were saying before, it's consideration for your why, that would come into that conceptualization stage as well?
Sorry, Troy, consideration
of your why, like why you're actually doing it, what your business is
absolutely
about.
Absolutely, yeah. Understanding why you're in business, why people should choose you, and that drives the uniqueness of your product and your business.
Sorry, I need to come back because I want to focus on just that one thing, the three yes. steps, the logo. Okay, for people out there that, okay, well, I need to get a logo. That's great advice, Dallas. I'm going to note that down. Where do I get a logo made? Do I do that on the computer myself? Do I go to a graphic artist and commission them to do one? Are there any websites online that I can say this is what I want and toss it out there to a whole bunch?
There are a heap of approaches, and it depends where you're at. Like if you're doing everything on a shoestring, a DIY logo can be a good start, mm-hmm. just to get you to a certain point. Look, what I found highly useful in coaching my clients toward what they want from a brand mm-hmm. is to look at some of the online
competitors or
no yeah definitely look at your competitors mm-hmm. so look at your market, but there's some online logo sites mm-hmm. and the one I can think of is Brand Crowd. This mm-hmm. is the one I use regularly. There's several that are comparable, and I'm not saying that's the best by any means. Their designers put logos up, they create a logo on a topic and put it up for sale,
right?
And it's there organized by category uh-huh. and they're highly professional and attractive, and it will generally raise people's expectation
yep.
of how good a logo should be mm-hmm. But also you can see some fantastic colors and fonts and imagery, and just the cohesiveness of a good brand I think is well demonstrated on a site like that. You can get an idea of what a logo should be. So, as I said, the logo is the most superficial part of the brand,
yep.
but it's worth having, and it should sum up your brand accurately. I think looking at a site like that is great to kind of go, wow, that's how good it could be. And the idea of a site like that is you can actually buy the logo as is for $200 to $500, mm-hmm. which you'd probably pay someone to do mm-hmm. locally. You know, generally, most people know what they want, and they're going to get some ideas from things like that. But just employing a local graphic designer, or you know, if they're working with a web designer like me, working with it as part of yep. the project is appropriate. But that's a great place to brainstorm mm-hmm. because unless you've thought a lot about logos, your repertoire and vocabulary of design is very mm-hmm. limited. So seeing what experts are creating and going, no, and narrowing it down is great.
I've used a website called 99 Designs. Have you heard
yeah.
of it?
Yeah.
It's really good. They submit, you submit your brief, and basically designers from all around the world submit submissions.
Yeah,
and
right.
they basically compete to win the prize purse, and you nominate. I think your logo is about $250 on the side, so that's an option as well.
Yeah, terrific. So there you're getting a custom brand, so you can combine those strategies, do your research, look at your market, look at some portfolio type things like that site I mentioned, Brand Crowd, and many others. So just Google logo design selection, and then go to a designer, whether it's a local person or something like
Troy. You just got to start, essentially. Yeah, just yeah. start where you're at
yeah.
with the resources you have.
Another question. When you have your logo and you're happy to have your logo, you've decided on that, should you worry about trademarking that straight away?
I don't think so. And it depends how unique it is and how much cash you have. Mm-hmm. There's a huge number of costs like that seem important when mm-hmm. you're starting a business. Mm-hmm. And look, there are there's a million good ideas out there now that we could all rip off tomorrow. Most people are working on their own thing, and converting a good idea into a product, there's work along the way. Mm. So even if someone takes your idea generally, that it's the legwork involved. It's not the ideas are free and they're everywhere anyway. So don't get too hung up about it. But
that's good
advice.
If you've
got a spare 10 grand sitting around, then start that sort of stuff.
It's probably worth consulting an IP attorney or a lawyer as well. Yeah, getting some official IP advice.
Depends on the size of the project. Yeah. I'd be buying domain names and other things that are cheaper, first of all, because they're one-offs, whereas you can tweak the logo later and get it through. So I'd be focusing on, you know, business names and in terms of that sort of stuff, and really can change as you go along too.
Good. Dallas, do you work alone or do you have a team?
I've got a team, so I employed designers and some coders and support staff, particularly with a lot of my work is sort of web design and digital marketing rather than just sort of graphic design. Mm-hmm. So there's an awful lot of behind the scenes stuff like servers, which I haven't got any grey hairs yet, but I'm sure they're coming because there's a lot of technical stuff and you really look to run a business. You don't necessarily have to spend a lot of money on that sort of stuff, but if you're doing it all yourself, you cannot expand your mind to do the big stuff. You need to get the little stuff taken care of. So the quicker you can outsource the real nuts and bolts, especially if it's not your skill area, the better you'll do, I think.
That's an important question. Sorry to keep jumping in on your trail here.
You're right.
We've spoken about this before, the entrepreneur, how you've got to wrap up if you're a solo flyer, you've got to wrap up, you've got to be the ideas man, the sales, the everything. So what's your particular strength? You've just said you've got the guys that do the coding and the web-based stuff. What would you say your strength is? Is it the idea?
I think I'm an ideas guy.
Yep.
And, you know, I like starting things. I like working with people and exploring what's possible. And I spend way too much time mucking around with my head under the hood of websites and things to really explore just being the front end of the business.
Yep.
I should probably do more of that. But as a result, you know, I really know what's possible with WordPress, which is what we use. So, you know, I know how to make anything happen with WordPress, and I don't know how to do it all myself, but I know the people to get to do it. So I'm sort of partly at the front and partly understanding what's possible, and that's the exciting bit for me is bringing together client visions with, you know, the technical possibilities. But I've got to avoid getting bogged down outside my skill level with, you know, just doing coding and things, which can really just suck up a lot of time.
I'm going to jump just a little bit because I have a question. You know, we're moving into a more of a knowledge-based economy with a lot of infopreneurs out there. And so, like, personal branding is significant to a lot of people that I come across at the space. Like, in terms of personal branding, is there anything that's markedly different from, you know, traditional business branding, or is there any tips that you could give someone that is looking to more effectively brand themselves, you know?
Yes, I mean, personal branding is really my big thing, and I don't think the term sort of does it justice. I think the way information and identity is changing as we move online is really massive, and we don't understand just what an implication it's going to have. So I think personal branding, particularly what our identity and our footprint is sort of one of the big developments of our generation, and we just don't know where it's going. I think that you really must have a solid LinkedIn profile, some sort of personal website, whether it's a business or possibly even a personal domain name. And another thing which is really huge and most people aren't doing, which means it's a good chance to get ahead in your market, is using Google authorship to collate all your content and establish yourself as an authority in your field. So Google is classifying the world's information, and they've been doing it for 20 years or whatever it is, and it's all sorted by topic and keyword. But in the real world, the person who writes the information strongly influences how important it is, and Google's known this for a long time, and they're assembling portfolios of work attributed to certain people. If you are one of the leaders in your market, if you're a producer and someone people refer to consistently, that's going to give you a very big advantage, both in terms of, you know, doing things like blogging or other online promotion, and in the future, I believe, job hunting, careers, starting a business, JV partnerships. If you've got a powerful online presence on things like social media, but also Google authorship, then that's a big thing. So LinkedIn and Google Plus are essential, I believe, going forward.
Mm-hmm. So Google authorship, is that, how would someone find out more information about that?
Google it.
Google it? Yeah.
No, but basically you need to set up your Google Plus account. So Google Plus is the Facebook that Google is building itself.
Yep.
And link to your content and link from your content back to your Google Plus account the correct way. Mm-hmm. And what that basically means is that if someone searches for your content on the net and sees it, your face will appear next to the content. So that's an incredibly powerful personal branding thing. They're Googling, they get a page of text, and your photo is in there next to your item. So even if you're not number one, humans are built to identify faces and perceive them as important. So that automatically starts the process of building personal rapport, building a personal brand, and getting more clicks. So
just to be clear, say for example, we use branding as an example.
Yes.
If someone typed in branding, ideally you would want to have Google authorship based around for you.
Yes.
You would basically try to seed the content so that you would appear there.
Yeah, for sure. So if, for example, you Google influential, which is my business name, so yeah. I rank for that, which is relatively easy because that's what my domain is.
It's a URL, yeah.
But, you know, rather than just seeing a wall of text, you know, 10 text listings, there's one that has a photo and that's mine, and that says something powerful. And similarly, my other businesses, you know, that's a goal, and it's fairly achievable. And it's a long-term venture. These are foundational things. The investment now might not really do much, but in 5 years, when, you know, you publish something that's a big deal for you, if you've got that edge ahead of your competition, it can have very powerful effects. So something to start early, not necessarily obsess over, but you want to have your foot in the door.
So Google Plus, LinkedIn, and what about a personal website?
Yeah, look, a personal website is worth doing. It's something I'm looking at myself. There's also some sort of social media curation sites like Scoop It. Names. There's quite a few where they let you collate your different social media feeds. Clout and Cred are other examples. That's a way to sort of collate all your social media in one place under your name. So, look, they're worth looking at. It depends how far you want to take it. Look, if you're a coach or if the product you sell is you and your expertise, think seriously about having your website as your name, rather than, you know, super coach systems or something like that. And this is something I've left pretty late, which is probably silly because my name's pretty unique. But I think looking at the big people across many industries, that's what they've done, and worth getting your domain name if you haven't already.
Dallas, has been really fantastic listening to you discuss branding, and it really is a topic that we could go into more depth.
I've benefit for everyone, I think, that's looking to step into business, whether it's a solopreneur type business or whether you're looking to build an empire. Brand.
Yeah, it's the first steps, really, isn't it? You've got to think, as you said before, it's the your logo and your image, your catchphrase, those first initial steps. Dallas, for the people that have tuned in and listened today, is where can they find you?
My website is influential.com.au. And there's heaps more information. I've really just skimmed the surface and tried to stick to the really practical stuff, but there's a lot to this, so I encourage people to read more.
Mm-hmm. And if they're interested in coming and seeing you, how busy are you? What do they need to do?
I am very busy, but I do love to chat to local entrepreneurs. And please contact me. I'd love to catch up and do connect with me on LinkedIn as well. Mm. I have a download of my book. I've written a book on branding, which you can download a preview copy. It's not yet published, but download a preview copy at my website. Just go to the section marked book and get your copy.
Awesome.
Awesome. We'll be putting a link up on that for the listeners. So do go and see Dallas McMillan's book there. It's a preview, so you'll be one of the first to see that. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Pleasure. Thanks heaps, guys. Great to talk to you. It's been really exciting.
Thanks, Dallas. Yeah. Thanks, Hamish. It's been an awesome Spacecast number 4.
Yeah, motoring along next week. We've already got some guests lined up. Who have we got in?
We've got the Inspection Apps boys, the winners of the Tropical Innovation Awards for 2012. They're going to come in and talk about their journey and the challenges, the highs. Obviously, they won a $10,000 purse at the Tropical Innovation Awards recently, so that's pretty cool.
Let's find out where that money's going.
Yeah, absolutely. So that would be cool. But yeah, thanks, Dallas, for coming in, and influential.com.au.
Yeah, that's it. And for everyone that listened in, keep sharing the Spacecast around to all your friends. As the audience grows, so does the content, and so do the unique ideas and possibilities. We'll see you next time on the Spacecast. No doubt.
No doubt.